This is from the International Common Law Court of Justice, which for many years has led the campaign to prosecute crimes against humanity by church and state around the world. King Charles's abdication looms closer as the Common Law Court deputizes British police to arrest him as a convicted felon. Crown and church officials will name more names in return for clemency as the court authorizes citizens to seize crown assets. And here are the details from London and Vancouver. In the wake of a November 20th court verdict that found him guilty of ordering the murder of Canadian Indigenous elder William Coombs, Charles Mountbatten-Windsor faces arrest under international law and new pressure on him to abdicate his throne. That pressure intensified today when the International Common Law Court of Justice deputized British police to detain and jail Charles as a convicted felon. In response, Crown and Church officials convicted with Charles have offered to name others involved in the criminal conspiracy in exchange for clemency from the court. Sources indicate that one of those making the offer is Charles' own security advisor, Major Johnny Thompson, who executed his kill order against William Coombs in February 2011. Along with Charles, Thompson was sentenced to life imprisonment without parole by the Common Law Court on November 20th, and the full details of that evidence are found at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS Updates November 20th posting. Now, these remarkable events have sparked a renewed effort by many people, including British royals themselves, to force Charles to abdicate his throne to avoid a political crisis that could threaten the monarchy itself. According to a source in London, quote, "People are calling Charles Windsor Britain's Ratzinger after the Pope, whose child sex scandals nearly brought down the Vatican and who had to resign to save the institution and protect other perpetrators. The Jimmy Savile connection was bad enough. Now Charles Windsor has proven blood on his hands, and that blood doesn't stop at just one Canadian Indian," unquote. And in that regard, more evidence has been submitted to the court that links Charles and Major Thompson to last year's murder of 10 Cree Indigenous people in Saskatchewan in league with the Crown-affiliated Rio Tinto Mining Company. Meanwhile, the court has authorized citizens of all Commonwealth nations to invoke Section 61 of Magna Carta and seize Crown lands, wealth, and properties because of these criminal offenses by Charles Mountbatten-Windsor. According to Kevin Annett, a co-convener of the Republic of Canada, which has replaced the criminal authority of the Crown in Canada, quote, "Common law and our constitutional history are clear. When a monarch violates the rights and lives of the people and is convicted of criminality, Crown authority is nullified and can be lawfully overthrown." And in that regard, this indictment and conviction is not just about Charles Mountbatten-Windsor and his arranged murder of William Coombs. It's about also the murder of Harriet Nahanni and Johnny Bingo Dawson and three of my Port Alberni parishioners, Mark Angus, Krista Lynn, and John Sargent, all of whom discovered something called the 12 Mile Club, an ongoing child trafficking and murder network operating off the west coast of Canada, involving many United Church ministers, the very men who had me thrown out of my church and destroy my life, men like Brian Thorpe and John Jessamine, Phil Spencer, Foster Freed, former government minister John Kishore, former Attorney General Ujjal Dasanjh, all of these men involved in destroying the lives of these people and my life. Well, don't forget we have the alternative now, not just within the Republic of Canada, but with our own common law courts based on that republic sovereignty. We are planning organizing classes, training workshops on how to conduct these citizen arrests and reclaim the territory and the land of these convicted felonious actors of church and state. We'll be conducting those training programs now and in January. Contact us, Republic National Council, at protonmail.com to be involved. Join the Republic, republicofcanada.org, and disaffiliate from these genocidal bodies. And stand by for direct actions occurring Christmas Eve, December 24th, the anniversary of the murder of Maisie Shaw that was witnessed by Harriet Nahanni, who was herself killed for that knowledge. This is about a simple crime, mass murder of over 60,000 children, an ongoing crime, and the murder of anyone who witnessed or protest that. And the other action, of course, to remember the anniversary of the founding of the Republic, January 15th. There'll be much more posted at republicofcanada.org under breaking news, murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. Stand by for more. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice.
Hi, everyone. It's Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, and we're back as always. It's December 11th. This is Here We Stand, the voice of the Republic and the Resistance, been here for 8 years broadcasting live. And today, there's another interview between Owen Lucas and I, Owen from Ireland, involved in our Global Republic Alliance movement. And it's going to be a kind of a hashing over what's gone on in Saskatchewan, the mass murder of Native people there, which is, of course, not unusual. In that part of eastern Saskatchewan, it was the biggest and oldest concentration of the death camps they call Indian residential schools. And we're going to be talking today about the cover-up of that murder, who was behind it, big mining, Rio Tinto, the Anglican Church, the Crown of England, all the usual gang of thieves. But before that, I wanted to just, as an intro to that, remind folks that, you know, this program, is, I often say, is for those people who just can't live alongside a system with the blood of others on its hands, and we have to do more than talk. We have to uproot that system and end it. We don't worry so much about how to do it, because how comes in the doing, the knowledge of that. We just know that we have to do it. And there's an old saying that I love, which is the best education is a black eye. You know, we can learn things in the abstract, but when it affects us personally, then we know the nature of what we're up against. And I was thinking of that because one of the dates I wanted to remind you of course, is this coming February the 9th, is the 21st anniversary of the launching of our campaign about genocide in residential schools. It started at a public forum, the first one ever held in Vancouver, that I helped sponsor with survivors, February 9th, 1998, in downtown Vancouver at the Simon Fraser Harbor Center. And for the first time, people began to get up and talk about these crimes. Well, we're going to commemorate that this year, of course, with another teach-in and gathering there and in other places to commemorate that 25th anniversary and all of that, what the campaign has achieved. But what was interesting was a few months after that was an even more momentous event, the first tribunal into residential schools that we helped organize in the east part of Vancouver. And speaking of getting an education from a black eye, I learned very quickly about what we're up against, because a hand grasped my throat and forced me into a corner the first day of the tribunal, June 12, 1998. The hand belonged to a big Native goon called Dean Wilson, who informed me that, quote, Chief Ed John doesn't want you talking about murdered residential kids, and he shoved me against the wall and left. Well, that's very apropos for the discussion today, because the Native puppet chiefs are still doing that for their own profit. We're going to be talking about that, how it's the genocide and the Native elite collaboration in that genocide is as strong as ever for big bucks. The other thing I wanted to flag, too, is that on the front page of the Globe and Mail, April 24th, 2007, they finally admitted that half the children died. But what was interesting, that article by Bill Curry of the Globe and Mail reporter who interviewed me, his original article had my discussion of the 22 mass graves we had documented, but then there was no mention of that in the Globe and Mail article. It had been edited out. And I asked Bill Curry why, and he said, well, the usual pressure from the feds. Who do you think? So it's not like the system didn't know about mass graves all along. They're the ones who dug the graves. But there's this mind fog that happens, as is still going on. It took another 13 years for the system to admit that, yeah, there are mass graves, after they had dug up most of those graves and destroyed the evidence. So we see the same thing happening, but our response is the same as well. We don't let this lie. We fight to the end on this, and part of our response to the latest killings in Saskatchewan and the cover-up for big money again is the citizens there and Native people and non-Native together have united into a citizens' inquiry into that murder. And we're helping to convene that as a grand jury. There's going to be more discussion of that over the next few weeks on the show, so please tune in for that. Write to Republic National Council at protonmail.com. Follow our work, murderbydecree.com. And of course, another day to remember is January 15th, the 8th anniversary of the launching of the Republic of Canada and the common law court case last year that gives you the warrants to shut down Big Pharma, their poisonous drugs, and all the actors in genocide. So find out more of that, murderbydecree.com, under ITCCS updates. Just go to the January 15th posting. You can get all those writs and start shutting down the system and occupying the buildings of the people responsible. Now, we are already doing that in conjunction with our Native allies, and there'll be more of that soon. So here's the interview today with Owen and I. Enjoy. Stay strong. Stay clear. We'll see you live next week.
Hi, Owen.
Hi, Kevin. Good evening. Wow. How's it going? Amazing.
Well, we've been handed a textbook case of how you commit a crime, how you cover it up by the three-headed beast we talk about. Big money, church, and state. Happened again.
I'm wondering if a good place to start with this one is to just, if you gave us 5 minutes or so of background info, because the background info is many churches have been burned, right? So am I right in saying that the native population, how do we call it? Are we okay with the word indigenous? The indigenous population of North America is on the march, and they're active and they're assertive and they're really pushing the docket, so to speak. So is part of what we're going to talk about here with this this massacre an attempt to quell the uprising?
Absolutely. That's exactly what's going on. There's, of course, more to it than that. But that's happening right now in the same way that, if you remember the trucker convoy that happened, this mass spontaneous revolt across Canada resulted in the Emergency Powers Act being invoked for the first time in Canadian history by Trudeau. And this public safety minister, his name's Marco Mendocino, he's another guy who showed up at the Cree massacre site, right? So, yeah, it's all tying in, and it's a way that they try to scare people, right? So just some background on all of that. It's been building for years, of course, and partly sparked by the movement we did just to expose the genocide. But recently, again, it involves around this big actor called Rio Tinto. It's one of the biggest mining companies in the world. It's the most profitable, and it's a criminal body. It was started actually in the 1800s. England, but had strong Nazi ties, you know, like a lot of these corporations, and to the British Crown. The Elizabeth Windsor's personal wealth went from a £300 million when she came into office to over $17 billion. And the reason was she was a major investor in the arms industry, uranium mining, and Rio Tinto. And so Rio Tinto discovers a huge diamond deposit in eastern Saskatchewan. Now, this has always been a hot zone for the genocide. There were over a dozen residential schools in that area, these death camps. And do you remember that clip we have of that woman, Irene Favel, a Native woman, describing a baby being thrown into an oven, when a newborn baby? Yeah. That happened right near where this recent crime happened. It's called the James Smith Cree Reservation. It's in eastern Saskatchewan. A few years ago, they found Rio Tinto discovered a $3 billion diamond deposit there. And so they immediately applied for licensing. The government, of course, helped them. The James Smith Cree Band immediately opposed it because, you know, they know what it does. Gold mining in the area would have strip mined the whole area. They opposed it, especially this guy called Chief Wally Burns. Well, his opposition put the whole thing on hold. And then suddenly, that was in the summer, September 6th, six of his family members are killed, along with four other people, a total of 10 people massacred in one evening by apparently one man with a knife. Well, first of all, you've got to be a professional to sneak into all these homes and kill people in silence, 10 all in one night. But they pinned it on this drifter called Miles Sanderson. And they said it was one guy who did it. The Mounties arrested him, and then he dies conveniently in prison, you know, kind of Lee Harvey Oswald scenario, right?
Right.
And he apparently had his brother, Damien, apparently assisted him, but he's also found dead in a field, right? So then they call in the coroner to look into this. The coroner is a guy called Clive Weeghill, who himself has the blood of Native people on his hand because he used to be the Saskatoon police chief. Who, during the whole period where they were the like in Vancouver, they called them starlight tours. They grab Native people and in the middle of the night, in the middle of winter, take them out, dump them on the prairies without their clothes, and they freeze to death. Well, he oversaw the cover-up of that. He might have been directly involved in that. Now he's the chief coroner investigating the recent murder of Natives, right? Plus, the big payoff came in. You know, the Governor General, the Prime Minister Trudeau, and our good buddy, Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, you know, they all show up and they do the big song and dance, the crocodile tears. $63.5 million is then handed to the surviving members of the Bank Council.
And you know, Trudeau's handing that over individually? He's putting his face to this situation?
They all showed up. Mary Simon, Governor General, Head of State. Justin Trudeau showed up last week a number of times, but last week he showed up again. They had the typical kind of, you know, we're so sorry about all this. And then he announced $63.5 million. They were, you know, presenting to the band. So it's the usual kind of payoff scenario. Hush, and now the mining operation is going ahead. So, I mean, it's that old, it's so blatant. This is the thing, Owen. It's just so amazingly blatant. They operate with impunity and they figure people are too dumb or ignorant to know what's going on, right?
It seems classic, right? This is textbook. We've got resources, primary resources, natural resources. We've got indigenous native people on the area, and there's mass murder with which to clear these innocent people of the land off. And because there's latent racism in Canada, stop me if I'm wrong with that, it's in inverted commas, much easier to make the problem go away with a bit of hush money here, with a jury. Well, this is a bit I was going to ask you about, Kevin. The jury of this situation is only of native people.
Oh, that's the other thing. Clive Wickhill, the cover up of the systematic murder of natives by Saskatoon police, he said it was going to be all native jury, which you can't do under the law. You can't stack a jury like that with one group. It's against the rule of law going back centuries. By native people, he means they're crony puppet band council members who are going to bring in the clean verdict, right? That was just the lone gunman, right? But the interesting thing, too, is I find the Crown response. These are the three top officials of the Crown, Church, and State in Canada. Justin Welby played that big role. Do you remember when we did the dig at the Mohawk Anglican School in Brantford? He put in a direct order to the primate Fred Hiltz and Bishop Bob Bennett to destroy all evidence in the mushhole that might implicate the royal family. Okay. Because we know they and the Dutch royals were coming there all the time, taking kids away. He played a direct role in that. There's a standing arrest order against him and Trudeau and all of these people. They're wanted felons. And they're showing up again like a dirty sock at the scene of the crime, right?
It's a mafioso situation, right? So the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, are the hit squad. Your quote as well was a corporate death squad operation, right? And so these characters, you know, with the crown badges or the church emblems or logos, whatever you want to say, they're sent in to do the dirty work so that these corporate profits can be shared and pilfered and stolen murderously across the Atlantic, right? Across the ocean over here in Europe, right? By these aristocrats.
Of course, it's bigger than all that, too. It isn't just one corporation for money. It's a whole system at work now, and it isn't simply racism. I don't think racism has a lot to do with it. It's systemic genocide. That means that they want to eliminate anyone on the land, whether it's native or non-native. The whole 2030 agenda is to destroy anybody who's traditional people living on their land. So that's part of the systemic agenda here. But it's also that, you know, the Crown and China, that's the other thing. Rio Tinto is closely connected to China, heavily invested in China and all that. It's just a machine at work. It's this machine that keeps eating up the land and the resources and the people and anybody in their way. They don't abide by any – the way it used to be is they would do these gestures and pay lip service to the law and democracy. They don't anymore. They don't have to because it's what we talk about when we say it's a corporatocracy. So they know they can legally get away with all of this. It's stacked. But the question now is what we do. And our response is, I should tell you, we've already got people in Saskatchewan gathering more evidence about all this. And we are – planning in the new year a grand jury investigation. We're going to convene it under the authority of the Republic, subpoena people, and hopefully bring about a common law court that's going to lay charges against all of them. And the power in this is that we've got a lot of Indigenous support in that area as well. And with Indigenous people, they wait for the right moment because if they surface too soon, they get killed. as was just demonstrated, right? But at the right moment, a lot of eyewitnesses will come forward, and it's harder politically in Canada when Native people are doing something to marginalize it right away, because, you know, it's they don't quite have their system in total place yet. They still are uncertain. I think that's why they're forced to do these extreme actions, because they are uncertain, right?
This is my point with the latent racism, right? I lived in Australia for a while. I think it's pretty similar. There's a two-tier society going on, right? So in order for, you know, we're talking about here about the sort of momentum of we the people, well, there's a divide, right? A split with that. And so in order to get, you know, grassroots support, it's difficult to get the European white Canadian population caring, interested, etc. Yeah. Because it's connected with the native population, right? And is there a way for this to change for the
Oh yeah, it's changing. That's the point. It's like all those truckers and all the people, their main trucker leaders are all still in jail. The very guy who threw them in jail is also helping cover up the Cree massacre. It's been the law that you can't refuse a shot in the arm since 1874 for an Indian. Now it's happening to everybody. It's like what we've talked about, that it's like what I experienced when I was a minister in Port Alberni when we opened a food bank.
Right.
The very native people and the whites who are attacking the natives over the logging and all that, over fishing, suddenly they're standing together in the food bank line together, that kind of commonality of poverty. And they began to see, yeah, okay, this system's hitting all of us. So circumstances cause people to see that, the material circumstances are in. But they do a lot of brain fog to get people still fighting each other and afraid of each other. No better example than in America, what's going on now. But Canada, it's the thing is, the country is so big, people think in a very localized way because of it. And so people say, well, Saskatchewan, what does that have to do with us? You know, because they're thousands of miles away, right? Often. But I mean, it nevertheless, it's the same system, regardless of where it is, right?
Yeah. Saskatchewan's very central, right? So you got British Columbia, West Coast, then Alberta, then Saskatchewan, right in the middle.
Saskatchewan, it's right in the middle, next to Manitoba, where I'm from,
and very rich, yeah, in terms of natural resources, and very sparsely populated, right?
All the uranium that the U.S. used in depleted uranium, it's all from northern Saskatchewan. That whole area is rich in resources. That's why the bigger agenda, China is working through Rio Tinto, wedged to get in there and then grab all of that uranium. And so, yeah, you've got to have the native population cowed and crushed. And they send these messages to people. We're going to kill all of you, 10 in one evening, you know, if you resist this mining company. And so it was a message to them as well. But don't forget, too, there's that number 10 again. And Justin Welby involved in the Ninth Circle Satanic cult, 10 children in Kamloops, 10 murders. You know, again, these aren't accidental. Whether it's real or not, they're sending a message to people, you know, be very afraid of us, right?
And it was a hit job on the same night, and all these murders happened, and they're trying to picture that one guy with a knife was able to, you know, go around the houses and do that with his brother.
Who's now dead. Who's now dead, right?
Right, yeah, just like Patsy, like Lee Harvey Oswald, exactly as you say.
Well, and the other thing is, they had a quick... they kept the autopsies secret, of course, and then they quickly buried them in the Anglican Church cemetery, you know, under church control. I mean, it's just one thing after another. But if people don't know the history and what they're dealing with, then they don't understand what's going on when they look at all these different pieces, right?
So without an autopsy, quick as a flash, buried and gone.
The usual. Now, but don't forget, in a grand jury investigation, if we get other coroners on side, they have the right to issue a coroner's warrant, which means you have the right to disinter graves and examine remains. That's what we tried to. We almost did that at Brantford. We had a coroner, chief coroner on board, a guy called Greg Olson from the Ontario coroner's office. He was ready to bring in a coroner's warrant, and then he writes me, I got to talk to you. And he says, I've been called off the case. I'm not allowed to be involved in the mushroom investigation anymore. I mean, they shut it down quick, which is why you have to move in quick and get this evidence, you know, before they shut it down, right?
But it's spineless, right, to play the chain of command card. I can't do it because somebody above me said I can't do it, right?
Well, it's amazing, Owen. And this is, of course, the bigger issue, like why so many people give into that fear when, you know, stepping back a bit, they realize, well, hell, look at what's happening to everybody now. We could be next. Don't we have an interest, even a self-interest, in resisting this criminal system, right?
And in January, then, we've got this grand jury that's revving up, that's building momentum. Is this going to be – I was thinking of prior to talking to you today, wouldn't it be great if there was an option to see it from all over the world, you know, to film it and have it online so that it could sort of be a template, a role model situation for other common law assemblies, you know, elsewhere around the world?
Yeah. Absolutely. Again, that's always the idea. But, you know, on the ground, when you move beyond talking to actually trying to do this, it is not only hitting a brick wall, the brick wall comes down on you. Anyone who tries this gets immediately targeted. It's why we operate in a very small, decentralized way, appearing now and then. It forces you into an underground way of operating, and so most people don't see it. You know, they say, well, you know, let's see these people doing it. Okay, if we show you who's doing it, they'll be dead or scared away tomorrow, right? Okay. So it's you're kind of in a catch-22, but that's why I always say to people, look at the result. I mean, we know Ratzinger stepped down. We know all of this is happening directly because of people doing this kind of work. So, you know, it has a payoff, but it doesn't happen in the usual way people would like or that they expect, right?
Yeah. It's a chipping away at it, right? You know, the reputation, if you like, or the perception power of these forces reduces every time they throw one of these stunts, right?
Yeah, and you know, people do gradually learn, and I mean, but the memory, you know, that's the issue. I think in the last interview I talked about the technology is outpacing people's consciousness. And the ability to control perception and minds even. So that's why one of the good weapons we use is humor all the time. So like when I'm giving talks, I'm going to do a piece soon and do a public talk about A Tale of Two Killers, the Clive and Larry Show. So we got Clive Wakehill and Larry Campbell, both coroners, one in Vancouver, one in Saskatoon, started out as Mounties, both of them. Then became the coroner, covering up crimes. Larry Campbell covered up the missing women in Vancouver year after year as coroner. Then he gets appointed to the Senate. He's sitting there in the Canadian Senate. I'm sure Clive Wakehill will get a similar reward after. But it's the same pattern. They always make sure the coroner is compromised so he can be totally manipulated, right, and is actively involved in these crimes himself, right?
Yeah, and it's almost a slap in the face inversion where they get promoted to say to everybody else, hey, we've got your back, you know, we have total control and power. If the heat comes on, you'll be fine. We'll even make your life better because of it.
Well, what was the name of that general at 9/11? He was responsible for air security over Washington, and after the cruise missile or whatever it was went into the Pentagon, he gets promoted. Don't you think he would be demoted?
Similarly with the movie Spotlight, where the Boston Globe investigating all the Catholic Church abuses, Cardinal Law, once that whole thing blows up and gets exposed, he ends up in the Vatican on a higher tier, on a higher rung of the ladder.
Well, the two guys that torpedoed me in Port Alberni, Phil Spencer and Foster Freed, they were my friends and they helped set me up for, you know, my destruction. And they both got elevated right after that. Foster became head of BC Conference of the Church and Phil, head of all pastoral relations, which is funny, right? in the church. So the system always rewards their own, right? But most people don't see it and they don't make that connection, right?
Yeah, and one of the points of it is to hit you psychologically as well, right?
Oh, totally. They hit you through the people who you're closest to, and it's amazing how often that works. Your own wife, your own children, I don't like the saying everybody's got a price, but it seems to be almost true with almost everybody that there's a point at which you can reach people where they bite the bullet, and then they don't want to be reminded of you. They actually end up hating you, even though they help crush you. You always hate the one that you've harmed as your psychological defense against looking at your own action, right?
Yeah, it's all energetics. All energetics. Yeah. Can we get a few more details about the churches burning in Canada?
Oh yeah,
for me this seems very intrinsically connected to what we're talking about here, right? That this seems like there's some sort of, you know, under the radar proxy war going on, whereby, you know, we don't hear about it, of course, because the mainstream media is wrapped up and bought and paid for. But there's this attack on the churches by the native population in retaliation for the, your quote is, ongoing genocide, right?
Well, yeah, and that's been an old tactic. I mean, if you look at murderbydecree.com and read through the history of these death camps, you know, there'll be letters from the 1920s say, you know, the schools burned down again because of the natives. So it was a common tactic going back a long time. For Native people, one of the only ways they could fight back is just burn down the place, right? Because, you know, the same thing happened in Chile. Do you remember a few years ago, Bergoglio went to Chile. He was all angry. And as a matter of fact, when Pope Francis was besieged in the Papal Palace in San Diego, big protesters wouldn't let him out because the Mapuche Indians, their children had been grabbed and trafficked through the local Catholic churches. So first thing they do is they burn down the church. There was like 22 churches burned all over Chile, which was seen as, quote, a loyal Catholic nation like Ireland, right? Yet, you know, that's getting burned. Same pattern in Canada. In Canada, historically, and it started to spike after COVID and after more of our work began to circulate in the grassroots. And that's how it's like watching grass grow up. I mean, if you look at the official level, all of our stuff is censored out, and yet, you know, I'll get emails. I just got one the other day from a woman who is the daughter of two of these old survivors I had interviewed 20 years ago. And she said, I share your stuff everywhere and everyone knows about you, but we can't talk about you. The chief comes down on us, right? I mean, that's a common remark in the Native world. So, I mean, it's everywhere and yet you don't see it. It's like that underground, you know, reality.
And Welby turns up again. You know, this is, we're talking about Catholic Church stuff right now, but Welby isn't even Catholic Church, right? And
same thing.
I, in your video, there's the quote you used, I think he prostrated himself.
Yeah, he did this big, you know, first of all, it happened September 6th, the mass murder. And by the next week, the governor general is giving her platitudes and everything. They don't react right away. It's only when the mining operation plans to go through, there's confirmation that the deals are signed and it's going through, then they start the big song and dance. Welby got out publicly and lay on the ground with his head down and his hands out, prostrating himself, asking for forgiveness. Now, here's the thing. That's a really interesting clue. Why is the Anglican Church asking the natives for forgiveness as if they did it? Yeah. It's kind of like this subconscious admission. Yeah, we did do it because we're tied into Rio Tinto and we've done it in the residential school hospitals and death camps. So why wouldn't we do it here? It's kind of like his they admit it, right? They admit it, but in their own way where they think they can control it, right? Like Sun Tzu says, right?
Yeah, wouldn't it make much more sense for him to just shut up and stay well away from it all?
You'd think, but not if they're worried and they feel they have to cover themselves. And that's how they're operating because, you know, they're not quite sure about all this stuff and how it might appear. They're also not sure about the natives because the band councils have no credibility among native people. I mean, they have the formal power in that, but look at one of their own guys opposed the mining, Chief Wally Burns, and then six of his relatives are murdered. That's a clear warning. We see that all over the Native world. People I used to work with out on the West Coast, they'd get involved in our campaign, and boom, child services would come in and take all their kids. So this is a more blatant example, but they said to Wally, look, you'll be next. We just killed 60 relatives. And of course, it was a professional operation. There were corporate contractors. You know, these contractors are hired by everybody. They go out and kill and threaten and do it efficiently. Who else but an efficient hitman would be able to do that in one evening, right?
Right. They use the authorities that we pay taxes for to, you know, abduct the children, tear up the land for the resources, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, it's getting to this point, this tipping point, this critical mass number, whereby we start giving a shit about each other on a community scale, on a international scale, and that, you know, just in the Canada situation, that, you know, white European people start getting interested in native indigenous issues and incidents and murders and crimes, you know, and then you start isolating the culprits, you know, the RCMP, right? And then you start looking at the Crown. So we got this Mary Simon woman again, who's Governor General, right? Who answers to the Crown and sits above the whole representative sham of the Canadian Parliament and governmental system.
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
She's all over this as well, right?
She's a formal head of state. She's officially native. They put a native woman in, you know, another hand puppet. But that way people can say, oh, well, one of the natives are the actual head of state. They can't be against natives.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's a classic, you know, they call it redwashing in the corporate world. You put a native person on your board of directors if you're going to log off the forest, and then the environmental protesters can't take on a native logging company. That's racist, isn't it? I mean, it's a brilliant way to control everybody, right?
You see it all over the place. You know, Obama springs to mind, right? He's a child trafficking pimp from Chicago, but because he's the first black president, you know, hooray, celebrates, you know, there's a guy with a skin tint pigment difference. So that means everything's great and everything's fine and dandy in terms of, you know, our system and the free world, right?
Well, it's milking liberal white guilt. And the point is, and I remember one of the native guys said, Kev, one of the reasons I like you is you always call us for our bullshit when you see it. You know, like white people are always thinking what native people can do no wrong. That's our way of, you know, trying to make up for our history of genocide. But don't forget, the first slaves in North America, in America, weren't black at all. They were street kids from London. In the 1600s, they'd scoop up all these poor people and ship them over to the Jamestown and the Virginia plantations, and they'd die at a huge rate. And they were indentured slaves for 7 years. You know, so it was the same system. And then later they brought over blacks. They had Aboriginal slaves. So this affects all, quote, races. And, you know, and so people know that after a while working on the ground, that you can't let them play the race card on us. It's bullshit, right?
Yeah, it's about, they categorize people, right? And then they vilify one category against the other, and they pitch against, once again, the divide and rule, etc. When I was making some notes before we came on, it's about psychopathy, right? We get to the energetic level quite regularly in our discussions, and you've got your three main characteristics of psychopathy: exploitation, you know, zero empathy, you don't give a shit about anybody, and concealment, which is the big one, right? So, you know, back to the RCMP, these Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they're wearing these, you know, uniforms, they're on the TV shows, Due South or Due North or whatever it's called, and they're looking like they're noble and brave, and, you know, and they're a bunch of mafioso murderous bastards, right? No offense.
Well, that's why I say to them, whenever the Mounties, there was a Mountie who stopped me the other day. No, it was the other month, actually. And he looked at my driver's license. Are you Kevin Annett? Oh, you're Kevin Annett, he said, right? And I said, yeah. And he gave me a little wink, and he said, good luck. Like, these guys know. And some of the junior guys especially, they're quite approachable, are on board. But I remember I went to a meeting once. It was a few years ago, one of the native Mounties, one of the female Mounties sued the RCMP for rape on the job. A lot of female, like nuns, a lot of them get raped, right? And it started a whole big movement, lawsuits across the country. So I went to a meeting. There were about 24 off-duty Mounties there, and they all had a lot of complaints and everything about the RCMP bosses. And they began to tell me stories about, they had to look the other way of the drug trafficking and the gun trafficking that went on, the Hells Angels motorcycle gang or business partners with the higher level of the RCMP and the drug trade. I mean, anyone knows that when you go downtown and look at how the drugs are being dealt right on the front steps of the Vancouver police and the RCMP, right? And so these guys who are caught in it, it's like anybody, they all know what's going on, but what do you do? Where's the alternative? So I say, hey, guys, you know, time for the Republic. Disavow your oath of allegiance to the crown. Take the oath to the people. And this is what they're worried about, right? This alternative in place. And we've talked about that before. You need this alternative for people to join. Otherwise, they're caught in the system, right?
Yeah. And this whole COVID situation has created these perceptional question marks for a lot of people. They see all this evidence. They see masses of evidence about how there's crimes being committed. There's, fast ones being pulled. The wool being pulled over the eyes, et cetera. And they're saying, so who's going to stop this, right? Where's the regulatory bodies that we pay our tax money for to look after us, to care for us, to prevent, you know, these corporate criminals and these institutional, crimes being committed? And so they're looking around and they're thinking to themselves, well, the police aren't doing anything. Well, the legal fraternity isn't doing anything. You know, who is doing anything? Do I live in an environment where, I'm safe, or is it actually, as people have been, you know, the crazy conspiracists have been saying for so long, that I live in a mafioso, right. What was your quote? Death squad operation environment, and they're seeing it. And that's there are these care homes where all these old people have been knocked off. You know, whether it's to prevent having to pay their pensions or whatever. But there's literally mass murder going on right under people's nose, and they're saying to themselves, well, "Who's going to do something about it? What can I do about it?" And here we go.
You know, psychologically, the effect is also to be so numb that you shut down. It can literally be happening in front of you, and you. You know, like the proverbial story of the thousands of people lined up to get into the cattle cars guarded by three Nazi soldiers. You know, why didn't they just overwhelm these three guys? But they couldn't, because fear had them locked in, and also denial had them locked in. Well, we were just being sent to a safer place. Things will be fine, everyone. You know, people do that right to the moment that they're gassed, you know, and that's unfortunately a mass tendency. But the evidence is still there. And one thing I wanted to say, I want to talk about China, because there was another item today, just today, in the Toronto Star newspaper, which is a pretty conservative rag. Even they admitted that China is opening police stations across Canada. There's another five that just opened in Toronto. There's a whole bunch in Vancouver. And these are all over the world. And you probably have them in England even. You'd have to check it out. But definitely in North America and Australia were the two big targets of China. These are like under Chinese jurisdiction, their own police operating in Canada, just like their own soldiers can under Trudeau's Foreign Investment Protection Act. I mean, it's operating there, Chinese police operating under their own laws, right? I mean, what more proof do people need, right?
Yeah, it's in your face now, isn't it? And it's interesting to me that they announce it. You know, why announce it? Why not just let it happen without, you know, saying anything about it?
Well, two things. They want to put their spin on it because people will know. They'll look at these Chinese cop shop, and they'll start wondering and coming to their own conclusions. So before you allow people to come to their own conclusions, you've got to put your official spin on it. So they go, oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, they're just helping us. Or, oh, yeah, I heard about the residential schools. They just abused a few children. You see, always the official spin has to go in first. So people use their frame of reference, not their own.
Yeah.
And the second thing is to scare people. Say, aha, now look what we're doing. Oh, we just killed 10 of you in Saskatchewan. Oh, look, now that we're letting our Chinese buddies operate free in Canada, you better not protest. You know how the Chinese deal with protesters and the Falun Gong, et cetera, right?
Yeah, but there's big protests in China, right? I'm hearing lots of reports of, you know, big unrest in China. So it made me think about, you know, we've been talking about how all this Vatican money is moving across the Pacific to China. Well, if China's not quite as safe as they thought it was, you know, you hear a lot of accounts that China's the most brainwashed place on the whole planet, which is quite impressive when you think about England. But
or Canada, yeah, or America.
But if the Chinese are waking up, you know, if these big protests in China are kicking up, maybe you know the platform's not so secure for the Vatican coming across.
Well, don't forget, all of these countries that we mentioned, they've all had revolutions. They've had revolutionary pasts. You know, that's in our cellular memory. And it's triggered by things like this. The New York Times and the American press and that are really reporting that, of course. Like, wartime propaganda is the last you ever believe. Like, every day there's a new story about Putin, like, eating babies or the equivalent, right? The first casualty of war is the truth. Who said that? Some British war correspondent in the Crimean War. So what do you believe in the corporate media? Very little. But it does indicate stuff going on, for sure. Yeah.
Can we have a little bit more detail on Rio Tinto? There was a quote in your YouTube video, and I'll put a link in the description underneath of that video I'm talking about, your most recent Kevin A YouTube video. But the quote I've got was, destroying archaeological sites and poisoning locals. Is the poisoning aspect like with the uranium that we've spoken about before?
It's multiple. It's, yeah, uranium. The same thing happens in America on the Lakota land, South Dakota, where they do what's called in situ uranium mining, where it's just an open pit. And a lot of the runoff from uranium mining is radioactive. So, for example, all of the Sioux and the Lakota in that area, they're all dying of cancer. Every family has people with you know, cancerous organs. Same thing in Australia and all over the world from the uranium mining, but it's also in jungle areas like Indonesia. They you know, use like Agent Orange and other stuff from the Vietnam War. They just defoliate the whole area, even if there's native people living in it. So all these people are dying from the defoliants. There's no government regulation. As a matter of fact, there's cases where Rio Tinto hires the army, in the Indonesian army, to go in and clear out the area for them. They're on the payroll. They put the general on the payroll, and you know, it's the same. They're acting like the private army for Rio Tinto. So, I mean, that's one slice of what they do, right?
Yeah, it can get you down, can't it? Because it's everywhere, and it's the same tactic, and it's the same, and they can keep on rolling this same template out, right?
There was a big thing in Australia because this one of the sites they destroyed had the longest proven occupation of. It was a 40,000-year-old archaeological site, which doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, of the indigenous people there. And they just went in. They knew it. There were lawsuits. There were protests. Boom, they just destroyed it. So it's like this corporate, mindless corporate machine that just eats everything up. And even traditional means of stopping them don't work. So, I mean, and the ties to China and the Crown are direct. Like I said, it kind of brings in the whole Charles Windsor aspect too, which is another piece here we talked about before, and how he's been served because of his connection to the death of those 10 children in Kamloops, right?
Right, but let's get specific on that once again, because we know that obviously it was Philip and Elizabeth Windsor, because they were the direct murderers of these children. Charles Windsor wasn't in Canada at the time, is that correct?
He was, yeah, we have information that he was directly involved because two of the children, according to sources in the Netherlands and other places, they say the two of the children were taken back to England. They weren't killed, and they were ritually sacrificed in the Ninth Circle ceremony, Carnarvon Castle, October 30th, 1964. 20 days after the others were killed. Carnarvon Castle is where Charles was coronated as Prince of Wales 6 years later. So it has important energetic significance. You know, he's done rituals there. It gives him the power to be, you know, quote, Prince of Wales. And that Carnarvon Castle has been mentioned by Tost, Nienhaus, others who were taken there as children as a hotspot for ritual sacrifices over centuries.
So when those bodies of the 10 children were found from 1964, was there some missing from the 10 that were taken across?
They were never found. This is from there's two sources on that. There's the eyewitnesses who saw them disappear, and then there was a woman. We brought her to the. I probably shouldn't mention the name. She's a police accredited psychic. We took her to the Mushhole site, and she literally pointed in the ground and said, dig there, and sure enough, we found bones. So she's very adept, and we took her out to Dead Man's Creek, who the children vanished, and she said, "I see them in a hill over there. They're not all there, but their bodies are put in kind of a ritual manner, like the bodies are arranged ritualistically." And we know the place, but I mean, what do you do? Like it's the same old dilemma, right? You go in there and start digging, and bang, you're arrested. People are too afraid to do it. So yeah, they're likely still in the ground there, but we know that two, she herself said they're not all there. And later we're told that, yeah, two of them were taken to Carnarvon Castle.
It all boils down to energetics, doesn't it? You know, these rituals and ceremonies are going to become increasingly important, I think, in discoveries or revelations that are coming through. You know, these buildings and these sacred sites that Christianity has put its churches and cathedrals on top are these sort of interchange of energetic points all over the planet that, you know, like a circuitry current with electricity. And as this awakening continues, they need to put their mark on it, right? They need to blacken the copybook or whatever you want to say, to prevent those healthy currents, circuits, moving around from human to human. And so this incident that we've started with today, these another 10 being the number, right? That completion number, again, in energetics, is another, attempt to dampen the rising energetics of the earth and the people of the earth, right? The native,
right. Well, that's why Welby is important to focus on, because if you draw a line, I've done this, we measured this. You go to Dead Man's Creek in British Columbia, where the 10 children were abducted and buried, according to the psychic. And you draw a line, the latitude, it goes almost exactly onto Stonehenge in England. Okay. And the whole thing at the Mush Hole, and Justin Welby's role in covering that up, he is a member of the Ninth Circle. And these 9-10 in Saskatchewan were killed ritualistically, you know. And he goes in there to, I mean, this could have been a direct order from his office to do this for the energetic reasons you're saying, and also to send that fear through the native community. So, I mean, Church of England, Crown of England, they're central to all this. That's why they're big investors in Rio Tinto, right?
Yeah, there will be no coincidence whatsoever that we call them ley lines or earth lines will be right on that same circuit channel as Stonehenge, right? But this big earth circuitry that you know make the biggest difference, just to keep it general on that. And then you get to children, right? So, you know, if we're talking about I've been doing a bit of study recently about the ancient Egyptians. They call it the Ka body, K-A. And it's basically a biofield. It's an atmosphere of each individual, and if you can build that into a healthy and robust state through childhood, then it becomes a very powerful energetic spiritual force, right? And this is why the children are so targeted. You know, you look at schools, they're basically concentration camps, high wire fences, uniforms, solitary confinement. There's even fingerprinting at lunchtimes over this part of the world. And the dousing down, the removal of that healthy energetics from childhood then creates these psychopathic tendencies and characteristics where people are trying to find their source of healthy energy. You know, chi, the Chinese would call it prana, the Indians would call it spirit, perhaps here in the West. So rather than source it from their own means, they're trying to parasite it from other people because they haven't been brought up in a healthy and wholesome way as you know, again, indigenous native people. This is why they are such a target too, is because they remember the old ancient wisdom that combats this hideousness.
Well, and So do we. I mean, it's just buried deeper in us, but that's the point, that we all have that natural access to that. And that's why you got to keep people confused with the energy of the electronic grid all the time. So that's, you know, in the previous interview we did, I mentioned that about, you know, this latest technology with the operating through the iPads and other portable media is that it's directly interfacing neurons. And that's the whole point of the shot, of course, that when you set up this 5-point grid in the human body with the nano probes, the nanotechnology, you become a receiver. You become physically as well as psychologically integrated into a global machine. And at that point, it's game over unless you can cut the cord. And that's why I think that that's got to be on the agenda of activists now. We got to recognize that. And it's funny because whenever I mention this in meetings, people are called depressed, like, oh my God, I'm dependent on my thing here. What am I going to do? Well, going cold turkey from the technology is fine, right? It's like any other comfort where we become dependent on it and we equate it with information and communication and all that. But, you know, life is so rich and our communities and the people around us, it's so rich and world, and we just have to get back into it and discover it again. And I think that that's part of what people are also waking up to, right?
Yeah. I think before we close, Kev, we should mention there's a really interesting documentary that's come out. I don't think I mentioned it last time, called Died Suddenly.
Yeah.
And it's with coroners. Have you seen it? And they're showing exactly this coagulation of the blood, this congealment that is causing all these strokes and organs to shut down, et cetera, because it's basically these the congealing of the blood. The coroners are pulling out these sort of black snakes almost out of people's veins that's killed them. It's a really revealing documentary. Yeah. And a really interesting aspect of it, the bit that really caught my eye in it, was how the numbers of the American military, the US military, is being hit harder than anybody in terms of a demographic. And I think they said that if 10%, if there was a death rate increase, mortality rate of 10%, that would be, you know, off the scale in terms of an obvious attack. It's up to 40% with U.S. soldiers, and the right. quote was, I mean, they've weaponized the health institutions.
Yeah, but I mean, why wouldn't it be happening to us? We've done it to all these other people. Why wouldn't it blow back on us? I mean, so that's, it's not surprising, but it's something that is like a springboard to what we do. That recognition should prompt people into action. But that's, again, like we talked about last time, the action and the organization and the alternative eludes a lot of people, including a lot of activists. We're like floundering right now. There's that sense of floundering. Yeah, greater awareness, but where do we go with it? And that's why, you know, when we do this grand jury investigation and the stuff on the ground in the new year, all of this has to be talked about. You know, it's got to be on the docket. And we've got to use it as a way to, okay, now, like the natives are doing, we will seize and shut down these churches. The Anglican Church, the Catholic, the United, they don't have the right to operate anymore. And that's the other thing. On January 15th, it's not only the anniversary of the founding of the Republic in Canada, but it's the first anniversary of that court case that came out that gave people the warrants to seize the COVID drugs, to shut down Big Pharma, to seize their properties of all of the criminal actors, church, state, big money. So that's got to be our answer to what happened in Saskatchewan and what everything you're talking about. And the focus now is to be on how you mobilize and organize people to do that. Because otherwise, they get so overwhelmed with everything, you know, we've been talking about, is that they'll just collapse into despair. And that's what, of course, the agenda is. A despairing, sick, dependent population.
Well, for me, that's the good news, right? Because what's happening is that this documentary, et cetera, and all the other evidence is getting out to these, you know, military characters, these strong, right, male warrior types who are beginning to and increasingly question the chain of command and looking at alternative sources of information and coming together collectively to join, you know, join our side, right, to oppose, right,
and that's,
this tyranny.
That's all promising and necessary. But don't forget what I said a while ago. The first thing you always see, and I'm not saying the film does this, but the whole issue, the first thing they do is put out their own spin on it. They create their frame of reference, like Sun Tzu in The Art of War. You define the field of battle. They do that all the time. They're always defining the issue for us. So you have to say to, in ourselves, based on our own experience and evidence and common sense, what is the real issue? Let us define the narrative all the time, because otherwise we're de facto operating in their framework, their way of looking at the world. And that's, once you do that, you're finished, right?
It made me think of the English Civil War, as we speak about, the 1640s, as we often mention, that you have the parliamentary roundheads and you have the cavaliers of the royals, but this new model army becomes an independent, almost political body, and they're these you know fantastic warrior types who are independent. They're not following a political chain of command from the government, parliament, or from the right. palaces and the royals. And for me, it's perhaps getting to a point where this huge military force of the world, the American military, is perhaps breaking away from Washington and the Pentagon, and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, becoming much more worldly wise and independent.
Yeah, that new model army analogy is excellent. And that's because, don't forget, it was the new model army that brought the king to trial and executed him and established the republic, because the conservative parliament wanted to make terms with the king. They wanted to have a constitutional monarchy. And it was the people, because the army was far more representative than parliament. Parliament represented the wealthy grandees, right, and the landowners. But the people constituted the new model army. And they were fired by a vision. They believed very much that they were establishing Christ's kingdom on earth. They were Bible revolutionaries, and they were few, just like the Bolsheviks were in the Russian Revolution. They had a clear ideology, a revolutionary ideology that said, away with this whole system. We're establishing God's kingdom on earth. And the royalists couldn't beat that, you know. And that it's everything, like Napoleon says, in war, morale is five times more important than physical power. Yeah. 5-1, morale to the material. And that's key. We got to remember that all the time.
And just to close that, your Sun Tzu phrase, one of your favorite ones, where, you know, if people are backs to the walls, they've got nothing to lose, then they fight like rats in a bag, right? And you know, here we are. This is where we're at. It's, you know, people are becoming much more passionate and enthused, right?
Right. And a final quote, the one I love from Napoleon, is he says, a bad general sees too many things. I always keep my eyes on the main body of the enemy. Right. So you can't get confused by all these things. Who is the enemy? What do we need to overcome them? How do we go about doing it? Like, we always have to keep that center in our mind.
And on that point, is it sensible for people to target their local community or to, you know, we're talking here about Archbishop of Canterbury's and, you know, presidents and monarchs and this kind of thing. You know, should people be looking at their council locally, or looking at their their health center locally, and saying, "Look, you guys are on notice for the crimes you've committed here."
That's what we do. We always focus in building up the republic on the local power base. So, for example, we go into the town council and say, "You got to nullify tax exemptions at Catholic Church, or we throw you out at the next election." That has much more of an impact than a protest about a big issue. You can't aim too high; you have to talk high. But your practical action on the ground has to be very localized, because that's where people's power is in their community. And that's what we organize first. So, yeah, very much.
And therefore, Saskatchewan, you know, everybody of Saskatchewan need to start asking these big, these important questions about who's responsible for these 10 murders, right?
And help us make the arrests, and help us, you know, bring these people to justice. That's how we start right there. And get your local town councils all over Saskatchewan to nullify the tax exemptions for the Anglicans, the Catholics, the United, like we've been saying all along. So, yeah, that's how you motivate this revolution, right?
Okay. Great chatting, Kev. Great to talk.
Okay.
See you next time.
Thanks, brother. See you later.
Take care.